I cannot believe that Grant Morrison would play dice with the Animal Man. Oh, but does he? On this week's
Comics of the Atom!
Alright, welcome back to the Comics of the Atom series, a podcast that examines some of the most influential and important comic series and the people behind their creations. My name is Michael Von Green, and with me always is the man behind the panels, Carson Wooder. Carson, how's it going, dude?
What's up, Doc?
Yep. That's all, folks. Alright, see you next time. Podcast over. Yeah, we're gonna get into that here pretty quickly. But before we do that, because of, you know, what's happening in the world, I thought, you know, I'd kind of run down some, you know, black creators that, you know, I think that you should go ahead and, you know, check out. There's a lot of them out here, but, you know, because I'm from Chicago, Eve Ewing, who's doing, or, well, she actually just finished up Ironheart. She was the writer behind that 12-issue series. I think that ended in December. You know, we've also got, I know, Carson, you're a huge fan, and I need to finish this series. I don't think I ever bought the final hardcover of Chew, but Rob Guillory, and he has his own series, Farmhand, so he's an awesome artist. I went and looked at, you know, I flipped through his stuff the other day, and I forgot how much I loved his art. It's so cool. And then, you know, on a more serious note, you know, Senator John Lewis, they have the graphic novel March about during the 60s, right? The civil rights movement and Martin Luther King. So go check that out, which is drawn beautifully by Nate Powell, which I met like years ago at the Fort Wayne, Indiana comic convention and bought some stuff from him. And then just for the heck of it, you know, just like, hey, I'll go find new stuff. Image has these two black owned creator series, Excellence and Bitter Root. So I just, you know, randomly went and looked that stuff up. So, you know, go check that stuff out. And Carson, have you checked out Farmhand yet? I think you have.
It's a great read. Like, you, in my opinion, like, it's one of the strongest Image titles going right now.
Dang.
Big, huge shout out to Rob Guillory because, you know, in Chew, he was known for his art. And, you know, he has some of the most creative backgrounds I've ever seen in a comic. He'll just be a deadpan or a serious, you know, conversation going on between characters, and you just look in the back and there'll be a picture of Chong Li from Bloodsport or just something insane, like talking about, like, you know, how chickens were banned in Chew, and it'll just be like, buckets of chicken for blah, blah, blah. It's just his backgrounds add so much to the overall story in that. And then you get to see his writing side as well as, you know, his phenomenal art in Farmhand. So he gets to shine in both aspects, and I think he's just knocked it out of the park on Farmhand. But, you know, one more black creator I did want to highlight was Dwayne McDuffie. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, one of the best black creators of all time. He helped spearhead the Milestone Comics during the 90s over at DC, where he realized there was a lack of black characters. So he partnered up with a few other creators and launched the Milestone line, where they're kind of allowed to have their own universe and shine a little bit. And then they slowly got a chance to integrate those characters. I remember the crossover I bought as a kid, where it was like those characters got the crossover into Metropolis with Superman, Superboy, and Steel. And that was a lot of fun for me to read. You had like Icon and Hardware and Static Shock and all those characters get together. But later on, I think Dwayne McDuffie's strongest work was his Justice League animated stuff. I read online that he helped write and craft 69 of like the 90 episodes, basically.
Wow.
So he has a lot of, you know, credit is due to him for sure for that series. Unfortunately, he passed away in the, you know, the early 2010s due to a complication of a heart surgery. So, you know, we lost Dwayne McDuffie way too soon, but he has always been one of my favorite black creators that I, in my opinion, severely underrated for his contributions.
Damn, that's sad to hear. Thanks for that, Carson. That's a great highlight. Yeah, I, you know, at the end of the day, like, comic books, you know, for us, it's just, you know, it's so popular now, or at least MCU, right? I don't know how that translates. You know, I don't know how superhero movies translate to the comic book sales, but like, they're definitely like, it's more popular than probably it's been in our lifetime, it seems like. And it, you know, it used to be this thing that, you know, it was a hobby that wasn't really favored, right? It was looked down mm-hmm. upon. You know, and I think, like, you know, that's the great thing about art and media, like, it can bring all these, you know, worlds together. Before the Spider-Verse movie happened and Miles Morales became a common household name, I don't know how many years ago, probably like probably a few months right before the Spider-Verse movie was going to hit, I was walking downtown Chicago. I was going home and there was this kid up on some electrical box, and he was in a Miles Morales costume, and I said something like, "Hey, cool, like a Miles Morales Spider-Man," and he jumped down. He's like, "Whoa, you know who that is? Like, oh man, thank you so much." You know, it wasn't like, you know, it's just, it was important to him that, you know, I understood, hey, there's a black kid here, you know, playing, you know, a black character. And it's like that made his day and it made my month. It was just cool to see. It's just like, that's awesome. So, you know, hopefully the world heals and you know, we can kind of move on and make the world better for all these creators and for all people of all race and creed. And I think comics can hopefully give some comfort and hope to that unity. You know, everyone can, you know, identify with, you know, these types of characters, and it's kind of cool to see sort of this new legacy and of characters that people of color can identify with. So, you know, it's pretty awesome. So now we do the impossible pivot of talking about, you know, Animal Man, but yeah, let's just get into it. And this is probably, I mean, I guess this issue 5 here, and probably issue 6 maybe, but issue 5 seems to be probably one of the more infamous issues from this run. Would you say that's true, Carson?
I would say so. I think this is like the first big turning point in the series where you kind of are starting to realize, like, this isn't your normal, like, DC comic. Like, the first 4 issues, pretty much, like, I don't know if it was supposed to be 4 issue in miniseries. I think we talked about it was supposed to be during our first episode of the arc. But now you're kind of starting to see the expansion of what Grant Morrison wants to do and where he wants to take this run. And it is just, it's crazy. It literally is crazy. But there's so much depth in, you know, to this story, especially issue 5, that it's one of those reads, like, you'll read this issue, read it all the way through, and then you'll want to just go back and kind of read it again to try to just understand what you've read. And I think that's like ultimate Grant Morrison for me.
Exactly. It is. You read this once and it's sort of a mind fuck, and you've got to go back and reread it. And because you're kind of like, what did I just read? Did he really just do this? Or did he really just do that? Like, is that how this issue is going to end? Like, what is going on? So this is called The Coyote Gospel. It opens up with this truck driver who sort of looks like Freddie Mercury, which I think is on purpose. But I don't know. He picks up this young woman on the side of the road who's trying to make it to Hollywood, you know, to become a star. And so they're singing a song. I did not know what this song was, and so I had to look it up. And, you know, so just before I say this, to make this make more sense, you know, one of the main characters of this issue is this living coyote that is being reanimated. Like, it'll die, you know, it'll break its bones, but it can reanimate itself. And we'll sort of learn why that is happening. But as this truck is driving down the highway, it's a semi, they're singing a song by a group called the Modern Lovers. Never heard of them, but the song is called Roadrunner, which is hilarious, right? Like, and the weird thing is that the lyrics are sort of slightly off. Like, you know, I Googled what's actually on the comic book page, but it's like slightly tweaked. I don't know if that's just because of, you know, copyright It's kind of weird. So I it's just kind of a nice little hint. I don't know if I'm look, back in the '80s, it's not like, you could go and easily look up the lyrics probably for an obscure band that really didn't last, that long. So, you know, good on him for trying to make that funny connection. Anyway, they're singing that song Roadrunner, and then they slam into the coyote. He dies, and I think, you know, what happens then is that it starts to reanimate, and there's these, like, two beautiful pages. I think here, too, like, you're not only seeing Grant Morrison try to kind of grow out his strength as a writer, I think the art gets a lot more fun and more interesting in the next couple issues, too, which is great to see. But, you know, the coyote reforms, you have this beautiful full page. It's just in this awkward pose. It's got this weird parchment around its neck and this blazing red sun in the background. So there's this very confusing, morbid opening to this issue.
Yeah, and I also noticed the Ajax Trucking Company. I don't know if that's supposed to be a little tongue-in-cheek nod to the Acme Company from all
I think so.
Cartoons,
yeah.
Is my guess. But yeah. Yeah, it just starts off with a scenario that, you know, could happen to any driver of the road. You know, just a wild animal runs in front. And you kind of just, unfortunately, you hit it and you kind of just have to keep going. So it's just, it's an unfortunate start that, you know, has probably happened to a chunk of drivers out there. So I guess it's kind of also one of those warning signs like, hey, be careful what you leave behind you on the road of life, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, let's get into the one of the few scenes with Buddy Baker and his family here where he starts throwing away lunch meats.
So Buddy sort of had a change of heart and he's gonna go full vegetarian / vegan. I don't know if the term vegan is used here, but he's definitely, you know, hey, we can't eat this stuff anymore. and this is a reflection of Grant Morrison's own personal preferences. He's a vegetarian. So there's just, you know, that it kind of ties back into that. So you're seeing more and more of Grant Morrison inside of these comics or inside this series. And so him and his wife get into a heated battle. And so he decides to take off. So he's, you know, he just can't win this argument. So that's it. And so he's, you know, flying off to the desert where what is playing out now is that. And this is where I'm kind of get a little confused as sort of like the explanation of what is happening. So now we see this guy who is actually the truck driver. I think it's been a year or two since that opening scene. It's a little kind of confusing, like the backstory here. And I think it's supposed to be a little kind of vague in terms of what's happening. But basically now what we're going to see in the next couple pages is basically something out of a Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Yeah, it's an extremely warped version of that where you kind of, you know, come back to the perspective of that truck driver from the beginning. And since he's had that incident, he seems to be almost cursed in life. You figure out the female who was with him previously, you just see that newspaper clipping of it says prostitute slain and drug raid. So that means that the passenger he was sharing that song with earlier has already been killed off. And it looks like he's had a rough go of it since. So I guess the solution he has came up with is he needs to kill, you know, Wile E. Coyote basically to get his life back.
Right. Like he feels his best friend / what I kind of seemed to allude to was more than his friend, like, you know, his gay partner. I could, you know, I think that that's like, you know, there's too many connections with like the way that, you know, the Freddie Mercury and then that picture and stuff like that. So, you know, he's really upset. So he blames the coyote that he ran over. But then as he's trying to kill this coyote, it's just, yeah, he tries to do it. Like, first of all, the coyote falls off the cliff and, you know, the pew. You know, that old scene. Yeah. And then the boulder, you know, falls on top of him. And he's just able to get right back up and keep going. And this issue comes out in December of 1988. And when I was writing up these notes for today's episode, the thought came across of, oh, you know what? I bet. When did Roger Rabbit come out? And then I looked that up and it was released in that summer of 1988. So
interesting.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, you know, granted Grant Morrison's in the UK, I don't know sort of the release schedule of US UK, but I don't think it's a coincidence that these two things are happening within the same year. But who knows? Great minds think of like. I've got a funny question for you, Carson. Mm-hmm. Did your grandparents or parents give you Roger Rabbit for like Christmas that year? Because my grandparents certainly did. And holy cow, was that a whole introduction into things that I knew nothing. I was born in 1982. This is 6 years.
Oh, like, I definitely saw Roger Rabbit as a kid as well, like everybody else. Like it was I can't remember if I ever owned it, but I know it was like a popular rental for us on VHS. So is, you know, you go to the gas station, pick out a couple movies and you see animated rabbit on the front of it, you want to rent it. So
yeah,
I just remember like my little kid brain was just blown away being able to see Disney characters and Warner Brothers characters. And among others too, there's so many characters in that movie from so many different properties. It's just mind blowing how that was ever possible considering all the rights and copyright stuff today. But yeah, that's all I really took away from as a kid. I think I rewatched it again, you know, when I was either in high school or college. I'm just like, whoa, I don't remember that when I was a kid. I guess it was just my dumb little kid brain blocking it out. But yeah, it was definitely popular in my household as well. And I was born like probably about 9 months or so after you were. So it definitely, I probably had the same reaction to it as you did.
Yeah, it was wild. It was like probably the first time I'm being introduced into alcohol and what alcohol does to you and like murder to some degree and then like sex. And it's just like, I just remember being like, why am I so infatuated with Jessica Rabbit? Like, why do I love her so much? Like, it's just, yeah, what a crazy, just because parents were like, oh, look, a cartoon rabbit on the front. This is for the kids, right? So anyway, it's just interesting. Like those two properties are like, you know, the subversion of, you know, comic books and TV cartoons and, you know, the realities of, and how you can play with that. And it is pretty, pretty interesting. But anyway, let's get back to it. So, Buddy shows up, confronts the two, individuals, and the coyote hands, Animal Man a parchment, and then we go into this, you know, speaking of Roger Rabbit, right, we go into this, the world of quote-unquote crafty, and Carson, can you kind of give a rundown of sort of the origin of this coyote named Crafty?
Yeah, so I mean, imagine like you said, that scene, what was it, Toontown and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like imagine like
Toontown.
Crafty's story started there. It's pretty much exactly what happened. I mean, you just, the first panel you see, there's, oh yeah, look, it says on the piece of dynamite, Ajax. So instead of Acme, he has Ajax, and you kind of see, you know, just random cartoon characters blowing each other up and having as good a time as a cartoon character could have. And then you see Crafty basically going through the whole Roadrunner origin. But then, like, you see this whole thing about him wanting to meet God, his God, and him just going through the pain he's going through every day, constantly feuding with, you know, this Roadrunner type character. So he finally gets to get into the presence of God, who all you really see is some arms and some funny like checkered pants and a paintbrush. And he basically makes a deal with his God. He says, "Much afraid, Crafty spoke, I will bear any punishment that will bring peace to the world." So he's trying to bring peace and all this fun stuff. He says, "Then you must spend eternity in the hell above," said God, "while you live and bear the suffering of the world. I will make peace among the beasts. That is my judgment." So kind of getting biblical here with, you know, especially later down the line with the cross iconography, if you will. So yeah, absolutely. Somehow Wile E. Coyote being made into this, you know, messiah / martyr. It's something that could only be concocted by Grant Morrison.
Yeah, it's wild, right? Yeah, so he, and the art too, yeah, like you said, is like a Toontown. So we switch from, you know, the current comic book style to this more cartoony type style, right? Like that's the world he's from. And so when he's brought into the world, the real world, it's just, he's horrific. He's more of this realistic beast. And yeah, the biblical, they're not undertones. They are loud and in your face. Right. He's basically becoming the savior of what we'll just refer to as Toontown. And you know, his sacrifice, you know, his will lead to his world's salvation. And so, and then this man who's been hunting them, he had this cross that was very visible at the beginning of the issue. And we learned that he has boiled that down into a quote unquote silver bullet, right? Silver bullet werewolves, like, it makes sense, you know, that this is how he's going to kill the coyote. And so sort of the tragic thing is, and it's like, it's more of this dark humor. Like, this is what Grant Morrison does incredibly well, at least up until what we've read so far. I'm sure it's going to continue. Is like, he does this great balance between tragedy and humor. You know, like, Antlion Man opens up the parchment and is like, it's just a bunch of scribbles. He's like, I can't read this. Sorry. Like, after, like, we got this giant, very complex biblical explanation of the origin of this creature. And then the man fires the bullet and kills the coyote. And unfortunately he dies. You know, it's just, and that's it, right? We don't, we'll get to like how this issue ends from a visual standpoint, but really it's just, it's sort of sad. Like, nothing, like, both realities are like, both like the man and the creature are trying to seek some type of resolution, and they really don't get it. Like, it's just a tragic end for the coyote. And, you know, maybe this man believes that he has killed the quote unquote devil, but it's not going to bring him happiness. It's not going to bring his friend back. It's not going to bring his world back. And, you know, speaking of biblical overtones, you know, the issue, the cover art for this issue is really amazing too. It's got Buddy crossed out on the road, tire tracks are in the form of a cross, and half the picture is drawn or painted in. And that it alludes to what this final, set of panels is, Carson.
Yeah, so the final set of panels is, I mean, it is really sad. I mean, you see the coyote with tears in his eyes kind of just laying there passing away, and then you see the artist slash god start to paint in the blood, and then it zooms out so you can kind of see the cross in the road, and it just says, "The end, folks!"
Yeah, that's all, folks.
So, yeah, very, very strange, especially like if you're not at all familiar with what's going to happen toward like the final arc. Like, this is that big first building block for it. And it, like, I could only imagine being alive in like the late 80s and reading this for the first time. I bet there were like some people who absolutely loved this. We'll talk about, you know, the 89 Eisners in a second, but I bet there were a few readers out there just like, what did I just read and what's going on? I bet it soured a lot of people toward some of the Animal Man Run stuff. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting issue, to say the very least.
Yeah, it's a very exciting issue to read, like in 2020 too, which is, I'm not sure what I entirely mean by that, other than like it's exciting that Grant Morrison is taking these creative risks where probably the medium hasn't had too many of those. But I mean, I don't know how true that is, right? We do have, you know, Alan Moore. I mean, just a lot of exciting things are happening in the comic book world. But this is just an issue that you like, it's kind of like almost stand the test of time in so many ways. And if you're not familiar with, you know, the Warner Brothers cartoons, which, you know, like the older we get, the more I'm like, oh yeah, like I bet people just don't understand what Looney Tunes is, which is like crazy to think about. But yeah, it's just fourth wall breaking, right? Which probably, I'm not saying that this is the first comic book to do it, but it's probably at this point maybe the most successful attempt at that, you know, fourth wall breaking moment. So yeah, just it's in like you just said, before this we had a very traditional four run story arc. Yeah, like you're probably just like, I hope you're really excited, but yeah, I bet you're right. I bet people kind of soured on that stuff. So you just mentioned the 1989 Eisner Awards. You looked up, you know, what this series was nominated. If you want to kind of run through that, I think that stuff is like pretty interesting and fascinating.
Yeah, so the Eisner Awards is kind of like your Oscars for comics, I guess. As big as it gets, at least in the comic book realm. So this issue did at least hit the right beats toward, you know, those people who pick awards and things that should be nominated. It was this book basically got, well, the whole creative team nominations down the line. I believe Grant Morrison was nominated for Best Writer. The book itself was nominated for Best New Series. And among everything, this issue in particular was nominated for Best Single Issue of 1989. However, Animal Man lost in every category. So the most fascinating thing to me is it was up against, you know, Killing Joke in a lot of categories, where Brian Bolland, cover artist of this series, won Best Artist for his work in Killing Joke. But Killing Joke was also nominated for Best Single Issue, which also lost to a book I never heard of called Kings in Disguise Number 1. So did a little bit of research on this one. Mike, I'm going to let you take over because I couldn't find on Comixology. I had never heard of it before I did my little bit of research about an hour ago. And you're considering order on Amazon now.
Yeah, I've never heard of it too until this point. And then if you can find it, it's probably hard to, you know, there's just it's a basic title, but you know, it's sort of revered. It's one of these like best of 100 comic book things that you should read. Alan Moore gave it a lot of praise, but it's about it takes place during the Great Depression, and I think it centers around a young individual who has been separated from his father. And so he teams up with, you know, I don't know if hobo is the correct political term. That's how the book describes it. So, but yeah, it's in my cart on Amazon. So I'm gonna, you know, check it out. So, which is great. This is why I wanted to kind of, one of the reasons I wanted to do this comic book podcast is like, hey, let's go back and read these great moments, but also it's just like an educational, there's the educational piece to it, or the discovery piece to it, like, oh cool, I didn't know that existed, so let me go check this out. And so that's, yeah, like I have to give that, I mean, that's props to you for looking that up. So I wouldn't have seen that. So yeah, we should just try to maybe always look up those Eisner Awards and see what's going on. But anyway, yeah, maybe we'll do that one day. I'm looking forward to reading that. But yeah, the next issue is a tie-in to the DC Invasion with an exclamation mark event that nobody seems to talk about, right?
Oh yeah, not at all. Like, I remember, you know, when I was growing up and stuff, reading comic books, they'd always just tell you to read like Crisis on Infinite Earths, and when I started collecting Zero Hour, A Crisis in Time was getting ready to come out, like that was the big crossover at the time, and reading Wizard and, you know, the other books I was reading, I don't think there was one mention of Invasion. Like, at least Armageddon 2001 may get a mention or two, and you'd see it in the occasional dollar bin. But even like flipping through bins and stuff today, you don't see or hear too much about the Invasion storyline. But like your notes and stuff, we did a little bit of research on it. It seems like this is kind of where they started tinkering with what gives people their powers in the DC universe. Like, for instance, over on the Marvel side, you know, they have mutants and then, you know, the gamma rays and all that fun stuff that, you know, are pretty popularized and known to most casual fans anymore. Where in this one, I think they talk about the metagene and all of that stuff. And somewhere down the line, they detonated what's called a gene bomb, which I have no idea why they detonated a bomb called the gene bomb or what that did to everybody else. But after they do that in this series, Animal Man's powers are kind of jacked up for a while. So that's about the only impact Invasion had on me, is reading this storyline, it messed up Animal Man's powers. But in terms of issue 6, we're pretty much like, I wish I could say as a big DC fan, like, oh yeah, Hawkman, like, he's severely underrated, people love Hawkman. I'm sorry, I don't care about Hawkman either. Like, I'm on that bandwagon. Like, every time I see Thanagarians and that stuff, I'm just of the same opinions about everybody else. I just have no interest in Thanagar, in Hawkman, in Carter Hall, any of that stuff. So about the only thing fun that happens in issue six is basically Buddy comes across two Thanagarians with, I don't know if it's another version of the gene bomb or something else. Basically, the alien invasion's going on, and one of the Thanagarians has another bomb that's going to cause, like, earthquakes in California that he considers, like, his art. And somehow he's also going to telepathically broadcast his life to those nearby, which don't ask me how or why he would do that. But basically, it causes conflict for Animal Man because, obviously, he's right next to the guy when he's committing this act. So Buddy's trying to defuse this bomb or whatever you want to call it, and he can't figure it out. He keeps like yelling, "Stop, stop!" And then like the Thanagarians are dying. Probably the coolest act of, you know, heroism Buddy has is when he's fighting the one on the cover, the female Thanagarian, and he automatically decides like, "I'm not going to be able to take this girl in the sky. I'm going to go underwater, absorb a fish power, and then kind of take her that way." And that's exactly what he does, and he basically takes her out really easy, but the guy just whips his ass, basically. So by the end of it, he's trying to defuse this bomb. He can't, and he's struggling with, you know, the telepathic attack from the other one, and then that's when a hand comes off camera and presses a button on this orb that's this bomb, and it's Hawkman. He just goes, "Yeah, you just have to turn the off button off," and that's where the issue ends, and that was issue six.
Yeah, at least you get some good Grant Morrison humor.
Yeah, at least it was funny toward the end. Once again, you kind of see how Buddy isn't the world's greatest hero. He's just, you know, an everyman, and what would everyman do in that situation? Would they know what to do? Probably not. So Buddy Baker, he had no clue what to do. Luckily, another Thanagarian who's on the good side showed up and hit the off button is all he needed to do.
I'm with you. I could care less about Hawkman. Like, you know, I've always thought his costume was stupid. I always thought that their wings were stupid because they just put them on and it just worked. And I was like, what, how, why? Made no sense. I remember when they were making Injustice or Injustice 2, there was sort of like a meme to get Hawkman into the game. Like, I don't think people were serious. I think it was just sort of a joke. So, yeah, someone should kind of do like a, what's it, Miracle Man, right? Is that who I'm thinking
of? Mr. Miracle?
Mr. Miracle, yeah, sorry. You know, they should, like, I feel like Hawkman deserves that kind of treatment. Where
I think there was a Geoff Johns run on Hawkman I want to check out at some point. But I love Geoff Johns, but like I said, I don't care about Hawkman, so I've never read that run. But I do want to revisit his JSA stuff, especially with Stargirl on the air now. So maybe one day that'll influence me to go read that Hawkman run, because I think they tie pretty closely together.
Cool. let's move on from kind of lame heroes into lame villains. Check out that transition. Look how smooth that was. So the next issue here, issue 7, is titled The Death of the Red Mask. And it continues Grant Morrison's balance between tragedy and humor. The cover of this issue shows this fat man. I believe he's an original creation from Grant Morrison. I don't think he exists other than this issue. So he's just this old, overweight, quote unquote villain that has decided to, you know, end his life by, you know, potentially jumping off this building. But he's also let loose this army of dumb looking toy robots all over Miami. So that's sort of the premise of the issue, but it opens up with this beautiful 3x3 panel page that starts out white in the first panel, and then it just slowly blood starts to spill into each panel and starts to cover it up, right? Alluding to what will happen later in the issue. And then when you turn the page, that blood transitions into his helmet, which, you know, if you're a DC fan, you probably instantly recognize as sort of like what the red hood would wear. So I'm not sure how prominent Red Hood is before this story. Probably pretty non-existent. To me, I feel like Red Hood is more of like a modern take on like the Batman lore. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that right? Like, yeah, I feel
the only other instance I can kind of see that type of mask being used was in Killing Joke, where you got to see that, like, what was maybe a made-up origin or the actual origin of the Joker, depending on who you ask, where, you know, Joker, once he got thrown into the vat of acid at Ace Chemical, he was wearing a mask very close to that. Eventually, later, that would be revisited when Jason Todd became the Red Hood in, you know, the 2000s post-Infinite Crisis, I guess you'd just say, in that point. It's definitely something that's, you know, been used various times in DC lore for whatever reason.
That's interesting. I did not draw that connection. What makes this more interesting then is that that's an Alan Moore story.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have Watchmen that has come out in 1986. And instantly I think of the opening of Watchmen when I see this first page, the death of the comedian, right? That continual close up of that, the smiley face pen that's covered in blood, right? It has to be, right? But it's also sort of a continuation of these, like, the meta crater theme from issue 5. So I'm sure it's a mix of all these things, but man, that's too many coincidences for for Grant Morrison and Alan Moore. That's pretty interesting. So anyway, this fat old guy, he's spitting up blood as he's walking up these flight of stairs. Animal Man shows up on the scene, talks to a police officer, and the officer's just like, yeah, these robots are a joke. They're not a big deal. And so Animal Man's like, okay, well, you know, I'll go see what I can see, up in the sky. So he takes off and flies around, and then he sees, the red mask on this building. He's like, hey, don't jump, don't do it. And then the red mask, gives a little background story of his origin. And Carson, why is, what are the red mask's powers? What is his background? How has he gotten to this point in his life?
Yeah, so for me, I've read this issue a few times in the past, and I didn't really put all these connections together until you started talking about it. I mean, I definitely, like, this time, I definitely kind of caught that Watchmen connection in the panels. I've never really thought about it before, but when I read this before this, review we're doing, I was just like, this is kind of Watchmen-esque, or maybe I'm just reading too much into it. And then you saw the exact same thing I did, so I didn't know if we're supposed to interpret this as like a more than meets the eye style story, where in Watchmen you have this, what we would perceive as a superhero team, when they take that picture as a group and that stuff. And then that whole story is about like their underbelly, about how they're not really the most heroic characters. The comedian's a huge scumbag, and everybody out there probably knows Watchmen, so I won't talk too much else about it. And then that's the way kind of this story starts and ends, with, you got this like supervillain who you kind of find out is just a fluke and a joke the more you read it. And you almost start to sympathize with him a little bit. And then at the same time, I kind of interpreted this character as the opposite of Animal Man in many ways. They had a similar origin where Buddy got his powers where like this alien ship crashed and he got infected by the radiation or some sort of cosmic rays from it, and he gained his animal powers, whereas this guy happened to be around a meteorite that crashed to Earth, and it gave him the powers of having death touch, which he couldn't control, really. So him and his dog were out just, hunting or what have you, and he got infected by a meteorite and touched his poor old dog, Roy, and his dog got killed by his touch, and he felt really bad about it. And then you kind of start to see his life, devolve after that, unlike Buddy, who, later on, we'll probably talk about it next episode, but you get to see him like get his animal powers, become a better human being, and, ask Ellen to marry him. Whereas this guy gets his powers, almost becomes a thief. And then his wife leaves him because obviously, if you're married, you can't touch each other. That's going to cause huge problems, obviously. So his wife left him. He only had one partner in crime left who could like turn like an invisible shade style. And then that guy went insane because of his powers too. So he lost his only friend to an insane asylum, basically, because he just, this friend became completely unrecognizable. So he's become like this old, out of shape guy who's not very good at thieving, obviously, because you see the quality of the robots he makes. He never really hit it big to fight guys like Superman or Batman. So he's kind of just given up at this point. And the only thing he really wants to try to do in life is to see if he can fly.
Yeah. And it's like his powers are sort of caught up to him. Like it seems like his, you know, his death touch is killing him internally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a great comparison. Yeah. Like sort of like what, like Buddy is like, you know, budding into his own, you know, hero status. Right. And, you know, similar origins, you know, that's the path he's able to go down, where this guy just chose a different path and has not led to a great life. And so he's decided to end it. And we haven't touched on this too much. Like, you know, Buddy, he does have this friend. In issue 6, they have a conversation. This guy who's like his agent or PR guy. And so Animal Man thinks like, oh, hey, that's an amazing life story. You know, why don't we get you out to LA and you can tell it. And so the Red Mask is like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe I won't end my life. And, you know, but I think you said it last past podcast, but like Buddy's kind of a goof. He's like, yeah, not like a great, he hasn't transitioned into this very good superhero yet. So he's just like, well, I'm going to take off. I got to talk to the police or something.
Yeah. He's going to get his buddy, who's like that TV producer, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's that one, you see him later on. They're like hunting buddies. And then, you know, he's a TV executive as well. So he's like, I'm going to go get my, I always forget the guy's name. He's like, I'm going to get my buddy. I'll be right back. And you're like, the last thing you want to do is leave like a suicidal guy by himself.
Right,
that's exactly what Buddy does. You're not supposed to do.
Yeah,
it ends badly, of course.
Right. Yeah. So the guy has turned around. He's walking. He's going to open the door to walk downstairs and get off the roof. But then he coughs and he's like, basically, fuck it. You know, like you said, he wants to see if he can fly. And there's just like this intense moment. And then you turn the page and it's just this white background again. You know, him up in the upper right corner. This is what I was sort of saying earlier. Like, I think the art or the artistic freedoms that they're trying to take is a little bit more interesting than, you know, that previous story arc. And then, you know, yeah, unfortunately he dies and we sort of get another 3x3 panel page, like very a la Watchmen. Even if not more so, because we zoom in, you know, to the dead body of the Red Mask. And then, because Invasion is still happening, you know, they kind of, at the end, Buddy's flying away and something happens and, you know, I don't know what happens. Like, he loses his ability to fly, but that must be taken care of in the actual Invasion storyline. So, whatever, we can ignore it. It doesn't matter. But like issue 5 here, this issue is, like, really, really great. Like, it's really, really good and it holds the test of time again. Like, it's such a, it's a good deconstruction of like, what does it mean to be a superhero villain? You know, like so many comic stories are about these titans, about, you know, the clearly black and white, you know, heroes, right? And the 80s here are in this full swing of just, well, there's a lot of gray, right? Like, why does, it's just, you know, this villain just doesn't become a villain because he has, you know, these powers, or like, or is the power that makes the villain, or is it the power that makes the hero? So it's just like interesting questions to think about. So it's just a cool issue once again. So this is like a pretty famous issue, probably, I imagine, in the history of Animal Man.
Yeah, and then you, like, as you go on in the story to the overall arc of Animal Man, they kind of start to debate, like, as they kind of start to break the fourth wall, this guy in particular talks about how, you know, the stroke of fate can affect someone severely. Whereas, like, you know, I think he mentions, like, if their roles were reversed, how different of people they would be. And eventually you get to meet other characters who, you know, they've been driven crazy by the reality they've been placed in. So it's kind of an overlaying theme as we keep going that, you know, something's amiss in the DC universe. And it's kind of crazy what that involves, and I won't say any more than that.
Okay, cool. Well, I sort of don't know, which is exciting for me to kind of continue to read this series. And so we'll just move into the final issue here that we're going to cover issue 8, which is once again a standalone issue where Buddy is at home. And for some reason, a classic Flash villain, right?
Yep.
Pretty sure this is a classic Flash
villain. Mirror Master, yes.
Mirror Master shows up and starts to give Buddy a bad time.
Yeah, so it starts off with Mirror Master is basically, he's almost kind of like a gun for hire here. He's been sent by like a mysterious organization just because, like, you know, Animal Man, he's starting to get a little bit more higher profile in the DC universe. He's joined the Justice League Europe. He helped whatever he did during Invasion. Like I said, still haven't read it myself, so I probably never will. We'll see. But the more he's getting involved with, you know, the heroes of the DC universe, he's going to have to get involved with the villains. And living in a suburban house with his family of four, obviously someone's probably gonna be like, hey, maybe we should send a villain after this guy to send a message to all of the heroes. So Mirror Master gets sent to basically torment Animal Man, and he uses all kinds of crazy mirror powers. Like, my favorite part is where, like, Animal Man just punches him, and it turns out he was a mirror the whole time as a decoy, and then he just sneaks up from behind and attacks Animal Man. But then he starts messing with the wife.
Yeah. And she, yeah, this is a really funny moment. She's not shy about defending her home. She doesn't play the classic, female in distress trope, right?
Not at all.
She goes right for the Mirror Master jewels and nails them right in the balls. You know, he doesn't take too kindly to that, and there's a little bit of a scuffle, and Animal Man, you know, is not going to have it anymore. But there's a couple things that make this issue really interesting, and it's Grant Morrison. It seems like every he's not wasting any moment, any chance he gets. Like, he is just trying to build something greater. So before even this issue takes off, there's an opening page with just a computer, and there's this little quote that gets typed out by Albert Einstein, and the quote is, "I cannot believe that God plays dice with the cosmos." The real quote is, I cannot believe that God plays dice with the universe, but, you know, whatever. Essentially saying, you know, Albert Einstein essentially saying, hey, like, you know, quantum theory, you know, there's rules, right? Like, there's not some you know, all-powerful being that's going in and, you know, twisting these atoms and protons and electrons or whatever to create the universe, right? It's like science and law, but, you know, that's like, you know, kind of, so it's like, it's an interesting quote that I'm sure is going to kind of pay off later in the series, and it'll come back here towards the end of the issue too. Which I think is like really interesting. But as you know, what's really cool about this issue too, is that, you know, as they're fighting in the mirror world, I don't know if that's what it's called, but I'm going to call
much.
That the mirror world, which is bananas to think about. But they flip the text on the reader, so you have to read it backwards. Like, the letters are actually in reverse. So it makes it a little bit hard, but luckily it's not around for long. Mm-hmm. This issue is a pretty basic scuffle. But there's also another thing that's introduced, is that there's this shadowy figure in across the street, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So this is where it gets kind of interesting. There's and we'll just call it an Animal Man shaped character is across the street, and he kind of over the course of time tries to visit each of, you know, his family members here. So I think in this one you kind of see them throwing away one of the Mirror Master's mirrors, and you kind of see a shadowy character with his head down, looking disappointed. You definitely get to know this character a lot more later down the line. He gets his own few issues, actually. So kind of fun to see these early appearances of this character, but later you get to see what's going on, like the complete story. But another thing I really enjoyed in this issue was the use of Mirror Master, because I'm guessing he was picked because, you know, Grant Morrison, Scotsman, Mirror Master, Scottish. So he definitely, not only do you get to go into the Mirror Universe, but you get to see, like, this Scottish backwards dialect. And then, like, he just uses, like, all the Scottish words. Like, he slaps Ellen and just calls her a slag. And then he gets, like, his butt kicked down the stairs. So he's having a lot of fun using Mirror Master here. So
There's a good panel where, after Buddy comes back, you know, and he's seen Mirror Master, you know, slap his wife and call her slag. I gotta look up that word. I might start using that word, but maybe it's super offensive. I don't know, but it's funny. It's like jabroni. I'm like, can we use this word? there's a nice panel where there's like, it's the shot of the front of the house. And then the next panel is, you know, Mirror Master flying through it. So it's just that, you know, kind of comedic timing. That's pretty good. There's also this second epilogue that I don't know who this character is. Is that someone that we need to be? I'm assuming that character is going to come back in some fashion. Is that a well-known DC character? I just did not pick that up.
I don't think it's necessarily a well-known DC character, but it's definitely a character that Buddy's going to team up with later on to get to, like, the real nitty-gritty of what's going on in the overall story arc. So, not the most interesting character in the world, but he's kind of like, I don't know if I want to call him a MacGuffin-style character, but he's really one of those characters who's going to drag Buddy into the overall problems with what's going on, like what happened with, you know, Wile E. Coyote and, you know, Red Death and other things going on. So he's pretty important to the overall arc.
Cool. That's great. And then, yeah, so there's three epilogues here. Mirror Master, we get an epilogue with him where he goes back and reports to this, this deep shadow U.S. agency. Is it the FBI? Is it somebody else? Who knows? But the man behind the shadow says, God bless America. So, you know, we don't know what that quite means quite yet, but I'm sure we'll find out soon enough. But then it goes, the third and final epilogue goes back to the beginning, or we're in this just unknown room. That computer is still sitting there, and it repeats that quote again: I cannot believe that God plays dice with the cosmos. And then it types out, he doesn't, I do, which is pretty foreboding. But I think it alludes, I sort of know what happens towards the end of this series, but it's kind of cool to see sort of these meta things start to unravel. Like I said earlier, you know, Grant Morrison, I think is not wasting any time. Like, he's taking full advantage of this, like, amazing balancing act of, yeah, I gotta do the superhero comic book, right? I gotta, you know, crank out issue after issue. But also, I'm going to kind of tell this, like, crazy sort of fourth wall breaking meta story along the way. So that's going to be really fascinating. And that's what this series is well known for. So it's going to be fascinating to see that play out for the first time for me. I know that you've read this several times, Carson. But man, like, like you said in the first podcast, you know, we got to get over this sort of this initial hump. But man, you just read these, like, these three issues, and then it's like, wow, like, this is awesome. Like, this is no wonder why this series is so revered. Like, it's really fun. It's that balance between tragedy and comedy, and then just, you know, doing these meta things that comic books weren't really well known for.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, I don't know if I ever realized the difference between these first couple arcs previously, because usually, like, I've just binge read them, basically, so I would read, like, maybe the first 10 issues and take a break and then go from there. But I don't think I've ever really read issues 1 through 4, then took that, like, week or two long break and then continued. There is such a huge difference in pacing, and this arc just felt 10 times more creative to me. So I think I kind of agree with what you said last. That first 4 was just kind of get your readership in to get that investment from DC to let you keep going. And then this one, I mean, it's just Grant Morrison running wild. I mean, it's as crazy as he can get, especially in that issue 5. And then the epilogue and the prologue in this one, of course, too, where you kind of get that what's going to happen toward the last two issues of this entire run. I mean, we're talking like, what is this, like 26 issues total, and we're only to issue 8? And then yeah. He's already dropping these seeds in the overall arc. So that's my favorite type of comic book storytelling that you can't really do in most other mediums, is just have these like year two long storylines with this big build up and payoff. And I think that's where Grant Morrison's story structure really shines when he gets a chance to do it right. That's why we were talking about New X-Men and the Astonishing arc, about how he let that thing breathe for years, and then it had, for the most part, a good payoff if you ignore the Here Comes Tomorrow story arc. He's doing Green Lantern right now for the long haul, and I'm really curious to see how that's going to go. And, of course, Doom Patrol, like some phenomenal stuff there he's done. So I think this is still my favorite Morrison, though, Animal Man. I cannot wait to keep going. It's getting easier to read, in my opinion. Like those, like I said, the first four, I think I actually had to kind of read them one at a time to truly give them the analysis we gave last time. But this arc here was such an easier read, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. Yeah, they were really fun. And yes, it's probably helps that they're in single issue format. Which you don't see a lot of that today. Usually things have anywhere between 3 and 6 issue runs, and then maybe a 1 issue transitional piece. But it's really cool to see these one-off issues, which were probably a lot more common back in the day. If I'm trying to kind of balance that in my mind, but I don't know if that's necessarily true. But yeah, it's just, yeah, it's very exciting. So we'll have to figure out how many we need to do at a time. You know, we're kind of going easy here at first. Maybe we'll kind of pick it up a bit because maybe we'll do 6 episodes of this series. I don't know, but you're right. There's a lot ahead of us. So we'll catch everybody next time. But before we end the show, Carson, where can people find you out in the Animal Man web?
Well, if you search SeaWoodard19 on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, you can find me there. I'm also featured on the Comicore YouTube channel as well. We also have a Facebook and a Twitch channel, but we mainly stay on YouTube. I usually do the Friday show, Comicore Roundtable, and as well Modern Men, which is on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern. This week we'll be reading Star Wars Dark Empire, which I'm excited to revisit. It's probably been since about the 90s since I read that thing. And, you know, it was one of those Star Wars stories that really launched that whole, like, expanded universe. Like, what happened to Luke, Han, and Leia after Return of the Jedi? And that was one of the first comics I remember hunting down as a kid because I needed to know what happened to all of my favorite characters. So I can't wait to revisit that. We'll be talking about, we have a mini-series within our series where we just talk about comic book based movies, and we're going down the years. So I think we're going to start with 2016 and kind of get into, you know, start building up toward the Avengers Infinity War world we're in now of comic book movies. So it took us a while to get through like the mid 2000s because there was a lot of crap to dredge through there. So it should be easy going from here, except I think there's like 1 or 2 more duds we have to address. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun chronicling the movies.
So that, oh man, I gotta go check that out. Is that archived somewhere?
Yes, online? Yeah, it's on there's a Modern Men playlist on the Comicore channel.
Man, yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff, like you know, Daredevil, right, comes to mind, but there's stuff that I never even watched, like Elektra and Ghost Rider, because I was just like, this seems like utter trash. Yes, which a lot of it was.
The biggest controversy in our series is the Green Lantern movie. My pal on the show, Drew Manchu, actually gave it a positive review.
And that's crazy.
That's one where I couldn't hold back. I hated that movie so much. So at the very least,
movie's not good.
Go check out the playlist and hear our fun arguments on the Green Lantern movie. I think that's some of the best conversation we have had on the entire channel. It's worth checking out on its own.
I will have to do that. The only positive thing I can say about that movie is that, you know, at least they took the risk of showing the core, the Green Lantern core. You kind of think about, you know, how movies get made, but, you know, or at least origin stories, and usually they leave that stuff for the sequel or whatever. But man, I remember when whatever the pig guy's name is,
Kilowog, you know, played by Mark and Clark Duncan, which was very amazing. That could have went places, but unfortunately, he left us too early as well, and he didn't says get something. Time yeah, in movie. Not near yeah. enough screen time.
Yeah, that is sad. That guy was awesome, but I remember him saying something stupid like maybe he says son of a bitch or something stupid. It was just seemed real weird to me and odd. Like, why would this alien creature say this very, you know, earthly, it's very, you know, vernacular kind of thing, but whatever.
Sometimes you just gotta stick to calling them poosers.
Yes, exactly. Just say, that's all he has to say all the time. But anyway, now we're on a tangent. So yep. let's wrap this up. It's been a long episode with only three short issues, but like we said, what an amazing three issues. You know, if you want to check out, my stuff, you know, Raptors Revenge anywhere. But yeah, we will catch everybody next time. Thanks for tuning in, and, we'll, you know, be safe out there, wear a mask, and, you know, Black Lives Matter, and, you know, Get to it, world. Let's make it a better place, like Buddy would want. All right, see ya.
Later.